Welcome back to another episode of Arm Drag Takedown with your hostess, Poyo Del Mar, the Bay Area's most wrestling-obsessed drag personality. And of course, it makes perfect sense that I would be hosting a pro wrestling podcast with a queer twist. Don't worry if you're not a member of the LGBTQ community. As I always say, nobody's perfect, but everybody's welcome here on Arm Drag Takedown. This coming hour, we'll be recapping, giving you the Arm Drag Takedown of SmackDown, Raw, and Impact Wrestling, as well as speaking to Ring of Honor rising star Flip Gordon. Flip recently got into a bit of a Twitter altercation with some of his fans for speaking out, giving his opinions on the silent protest of Colin Kaepernick and others within the NFL and NBA taking a knee during the national anthem. We're going to talk to him about that in addition to his upcoming series of appearances on the Ring of Honor Global Wars Tour, which culminates this Sunday in Chicago, Illinois, at the Global Wars Eye pay-per-view event where he will face Will Ospreay. Plus, I'll be recapping you on a recent All-Pro Wrestling show, an upcoming Wrestling for Charity show I'm going to be part of, and much more. You're listening to Arm Drag Takedown. I'm the first lady of professional wrestling, Poyo Del Mar, and we'll be back in a moment. In case you missed the very first episode of Arm Drag Takedown, featuring TNA Knockouts Hall of Famer Gail Kim, check us out on Twitter and Facebook. Follow this podcast at ADT with PDM. That's ADT with PDM, Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. And we're back. It's time to dive right into the Arm Drag Takedown of this week's Monday Night Raw. Raw, of course, kicked off this week with a reunion of The Shield, prompted by a segment in Miz TV wherein The Bar and a slightly dismantled version of The Miztourage were so excited about their recent beatdowns of all three members of The Shield, Ambrose, Rollins, and Reigns, to hit the ring and lay out the four men and set things up for an upcoming match between The Miz and The Bar facing off against the reunited Shield. First impression of this, unfortunately for The Miz, who I absolutely adore, thinking that he is probably the best heel in all of WWE as a whole, these three guys do not stack up against Rollins, Ambrose, and Reigns. Even as much as I dislike Ambrose and Reigns, it's obvious to me The Bar and The Miz don't stand a chance in this TLC match. But more importantly, I have to tell you, the thing that stood out to me during this entire beginning segment was I have no recollection whatsoever of The Shield ever being called the Hounds of Justice. For an impromptu reunion that was so surprising to everyone, they sure as hell coined a new t-shirt phrase with a form of rapidity that I haven't seen in ages. Be guaranteed that the Hounds of Justice t-shirts are going to be on sale well before TLC and certainly at TLC. But this leads to the next segment, which saw Matt Hardy facing off against Braun Strowman. Matt put on one hell of a match against Braun, and good on WWE for allowing Matt to at least seem like he had a chance, albeit a slim one, of upsetting the monster among men. Braun, of course, ultimately destroys Matt and prepares to carry him off into who the hell knows where he was taking him, only to be confronted by all three members of The Shield. Of course, The Shield in recent weeks has had issues with Braun. All three of them, he's basically beaten them down one by one. So this trio is out to seek revenge. Now, how it is that a trio of babyfaces have to basically triple team one guy in an effort to get revenge is seen as like what good guys do, I'm not certain. Normally, trios of heels beat up on the good guy because of the fact that, you know, triple teaming somebody isn't necessarily fair play, but apparently in the world that WWE is living in right now, Braun Strowman is such a monster that the WWE universe thinks it's really cool that three guys are going to beat up on one. Well, it definitely took the three of them to do it. Braun did not back down whatsoever from them, which I thought was really pretty rad. And ultimately, as a result, received a triple powerbomb through the announce table leading up to what now we find out by the end of the show will be The Miz, The Bar, and Braun Strowman in a 4-on-3 match at TLC against The Shield. By the way, yep, don't give a fuck about this Shield reunion. Don't care about it whatsoever. Fingers are still crossed that Rollins will, just as he has in the past, make a heel turn. And I do not want to see Seth Rollins strapped down with this stupid storyline. I just don't like him being second fiddle to Roman Reigns. I think he's got a lot more charisma, a lot more talent overall than Reigns could ever hope to have. And I think that this is just really sidetracking him. Jason Jordan's push continued as he defeated Carl Anderson in a one-on-one match. Nobody gives a fuck about this, really. At least I don't. Elias defeated Apollo Crews as he continues to wage war against Titus Worldwide. Elias definitely deserves far better than Apollo Crews or anything relating to Titus, but I guess all in good time. Kurt Angle confronts Enzo Amore during a promo where Enzo is complaining about how suddenly he's got this title match coming up at TLC against Kalisto, the newest member of the Cruiserweight division in 205 Live. Kurt Angle says that, oh, well, you know, your clause in your thing says that you only don't have to defend against people who attacked you who were signed before I signed this clause. This whole thing is so damn convoluted. I'm not really sure what the hell this is about, but regardless, Enzo's playing the whining heel. Kurt Angle decides that he is going to move up Kalisto's title match from TLC to Raw on Monday night, and it's going to be a lumberjack match with everybody surrounding the ring. I'll get back to that in a minute. Alexa Bliss and the Mickie James storyline continues heading towards TLC, where Mickie James will finally have her opportunity at the Women's Championship. Alexa shows some, like, old-timey video recapping. Oh, God. You know, honest to goodness, Mickie James deserves so much better than this. But I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that Mickie will end up taking the belt off of Alexa at TLC, setting up eventually something down the road. I think that I would almost bet that somewhere in Mickie James's contract, when she returned to WWE, she was guaranteed at least one championship reign. If she wins the title at TLC, she'll become a 7-time women's champion in WWE, tying Trish Stratus for that record. So good luck to Mickie James. She definitely, definitely deserves it. There was a throwaway Cruiserweights tag team match, yawn, yawn, yawn. In a real shocker, all of the women in the division on Raw are fighting face a debuting Asuka at TLC. Why anybody would want to be fed to Asuka? Not sure. I guess the idea being that they could make a name for themselves by upending her in her debut. Well, it turns out initially it's supposed to be like a 5-way match, and then it turns into an elimination match, which seemed to even surprise the announcers. So things must have been changing on the fly. As it turns out, Emma picks up a win. That's a real shock, except for the fact that if you think about it, of course they're going to feed Emma to Asuka in her debut. They don't want to devalue anybody who might actually be moving somewhere on the roster, and Emma is firmly at the bottom of the barrel, so allowing her to pick up a surprise win, ultimately pinning Sasha Banks to go on to this match, it's an easy way to feed Asuka a basic bitch and then let things move on from there. So finally, in the main event, it is Enzo Amore facing Kalisto for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship in a lumberjack match. Rumors abound that originally this match was supposed to be Neville facing off against Enzo Amore, but word on the street is that Neville has asked for his WWE release, presumably because of the fact that he's an actual amazing competitor and they've caused him to job to Enzo Amore. He was allegedly, from what I've read and heard about the internet, supposed to job to him again on Monday. God only knows that that would make nobody happy. So, as it turns out, Kalisto faces Enzo in what turned out to be a pretty damn good match. There was a high spot off the top rope where it was a superplex into all of the members of the Cruiserweight division, which I saw coming a mile away, you guys. Why do you think that they were over there looking like a phalanx? Look it up. It's a big SAT word, a phalanx. But they were there. They do it. Ultimately, Kalisto and Enzo get back in the ring. Kalisto surprises Enzo, winning the Cruiserweight Championship as we go off the air with a new Cruiserweight Champion. By the way, on the birthday of Eddie Guerrero, who is Kalisto's idol, I guess. It will be very interesting to see where the Cruiserweight division goes from here. I honestly expected this Enzo title reign to last a significant while longer because of the fact that, in spite of the fact that Enzo doesn't do shit for me, he's clearly causing people to take interest in 205 Live in a way that other Cruiserweights haven't so far. I will say that I've always been interested in Neville. His character is so well-defined, and if he leaves WWE, which kind of, fingers crossed, I hope he does, I'd love to see him somewhere else where he is treated as a main event level contender. He has the talent, he has the skills, and he has the personality. What he did for the Cruiserweights when nobody else gave a shit about them really speaks volumes for him. Enzo, of course he does well. He got bumped down from the main roster to the Cruiserweight division to 205 Live as punishment. Yeah, he was already a well-liked star in terms of fan support. That's because fans these days just love a catchphrase. Just ask Dolph Ziggler. Hello. Of course, I'm saving the absolute best event for last, or at least the most interesting and talked about event of the night. That was the debut of Sister Abigail. Many people have been wondering over the past couple of weeks, especially after Bray Wyatt's promo last week where he suggested or implied that he might actually be Sister Abigail, and WWE went with it. Bray cuts a promo on Finn Balor wherein he is apparently possessed by the demon or the spirit or the personality of Sister Abigail. The part about this that really got me, you guys, is the fact that Finn Balor later in the evening played this angle with a straight face. He talked about how dangerous Bray Wyatt was now that he's Sister Abigail and how he was terrified of Sister Abigail or didn't know what to expect. I will tell you, we got to see the Eater of Worlds versus the Demon in their first meeting, and then it was the Man versus the Man, and now are we going to see the Man versus the Woman? Or is this the demon versus the woman? Or is the woman a demon herself? It was an interesting promo by Bray. I will give him full credit for letting WWE go with this. I do think that it certainly sets his character apart and adds a whole new layer to this. I've always been wondering how they were going to eventually play this out. I did not foresee this. We are talking serious Norman Bates bullshit going on. Bray Wyatt is Sister Abigail. He's possessed by her demon, and he even seems afraid of this personality or this demonic presence or otherworldly angle. Bray versus Finn Balor has taken on a new level of interest, if for no other reason than the fact that I want to see how WWE conveys that Bray is Sister Abigail without all the CGI bullshit that they managed to pull during this pre-taped promo. It's easy to make her mysteriously appear when you've got a team doing this, but what are they going to do at a live event? I guess we're going to have to wait for TLC. Speaking of which, things have been set up for TLC. Still not that interested, to be honest, but we'll see where things go as we progress. We've still got 2 more weeks. That is my arm drag takedown of WWE's Monday Night Raw. Now let's take a look at what happened on Tuesday night for the Blue Brand. SmackDown Live kicks off with newly crowned WWE SmackDown Live Tag Team Champions, The Usos, in the ring, bragging about their victory at Hell in a Cell. Of course, things take an unexpected turn when they call out The New Day for a in-ring confrontation. Turns out, The Usos have decided that they would like to call a truce with New Day, saying that they respect the men who have helped them rule the SmackDown Tag Team Division throughout 2017. Well, that's great and everything, but how in the hell are the New Day going to respond to the idea that they might not be able to get their tag team titles back? Wouldn't the tag team championships trump respect from these guys? Who knows? What we did find out immediately following that is that all of the other teams in the SmackDown division come out to the ring, each wanting their shot at Tag Team Gold. Turns out that we are going to have a four-way match between Chad Gable, Shelton Benjamin, The Ascension, Breezango, and... shit, I've forgotten. Oh, and the Hype Brothers. It's easy to forget the Hype Brothers, isn't it? Yawn. So, the four teams go into the match. I knew before it even started that Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin were going to win this. For whatever reason, SmackDown Live is really wanting to push this team. They've even given them matching trunks. I don't know if anybody else saw that. They have cute little matching trunks now. To me, they don't gel as well as a team as Jason Jordan and Chad Gable did, because they were similar in size and build, but let's just go with it for now. As it turns out, Gable and Benjamin win the match, becoming the new number one contenders to the SmackDown Live Tag Team Belts, which sets up for a confrontation in the future with the Usos. It'll be interesting to watch this go down. I really personally wish that Breezango had won. I think the Fashion Police are doing some really amazing stuff. The Fashion Files are hilarious. Breezango has a great chemistry in the ring. I don't like the fact that they have been basically restricted to being a comedy act, but we'll just roll with it for now. They are way too talented to let that hold them back. And I suppose it's easy to consider that initially New Day also started out as what would appear to be a comedy act. And look where they are now as well. Still more to come from Breezango, or the Fashion Police, as I prefer to call them, because I think Breezango is a horrible name. And in the meantime, we're going to get Gable and Benjamin versus the Usos. Where this leaves New Day, nobody knows, but we'll find out. Up next, Becky Lynch faced off against Carmella. Miss Money in the Bank talks a great game, but once again, consistently, she was pinned by Becky Lynch. I'm not sure where this is going for them. I guess that they just have to keep the women busy somehow. Carmella continues to hold on to the Money in the Bank briefcase. James Ellsworth was chained up at ringside, and I guess I like Carmella. Becky doesn't do anything for me, and that may not be a popular opinion. Becky Lynch doesn't do shit for me, you guys. Not a big fan of hers. I think she's got a great look. I think she's an amazing wrestler. I just am not really that interested in her individually. Big news during the course of the show was obviously discussion of and the in-ring reunion of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. For those who missed Hell in a Cell, Sami Zayn played a pivotal role in the match between Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens. Shane McMahon went to the top of the Hell in a Cell and decided to jump off onto Kevin Owens, who was laid out across an announce table. At the last minute, Sami Zayn shows up and removes Kevin Owens from the table, allowing Shane O'Mac to crash land and giving Kevin Owens, his longtime arch nemesis, the victory. Well, what can we do to explain this? As it turns out, Sami Zayn has been feeling a little bit overlooked on the Blue Brand after being promised that it was the land of opportunity by Shane. He says that Shane has ignored him. Shane has done very little to help push him forward. And even when Sami went to warn Shane last week that Kevin Owens is a kind of competitor he's never faced before, Shane-O blew him off, basically implying that Sami has his own problems to worry about. Well, Sami acknowledged it. Kevin Owens has been right all the time. Kevin Owens is a multiple-time WWE champion, and Sami Zayn is a loser. So it looks like we're going to get to see a new side of Sami Zayn going forward. And I think that this might be the change in attitude that we need to see Sami Zayn finally start to accomplish some of his potential in WWE. So good on you, Sami Zayn. I'm actually quite excited to see where this goes from here. I nearly fell asleep during the Shinsuke Nakamura and Randy Orton match versus Rusev and Aiden English. I think that it's a very interesting decision that Aiden English is moving up on the roster. I swear to you, with 100% sincerity, I thought this guy and his horrible singing gimmick was doomed to be along the lines of Lanny Poffo out reciting poetry in the ring. Does anybody remember this? This is back in the day. It's going back way back in the day. But after years of being jobbed out as Leapin' Lanny Poffo, he got repackaged as the genius, and then he started doing like poetry and bullshit. It was pretty pathetic, but basically it was the best he ever got during his career in WWE, in spite of the fact that he's Macho Man Randy Savage's brother, right? So I thought for sure that Aiden English, the drama king, was going to be doomed to something similar. He's actually been moved up the ranks and is getting matches against Shinsuke Nakamura and Randy Orton. Sure, his ass loses, but at least he's in contention with these men. So, I mean, obviously, Orton and Shinsuke pick up the win. Rusev and Aiden English banished back to wherever they're going. Rusev is somebody they are seriously missing the boat on, you guys. I'm a big Rusev fan, so let's hope for more from him. But that's what's going on in that angle right now. Bobby Roode ended up facing off against Dolph Ziggler in a confrontation in the ring. Not a match, but a confrontation. Bobby Roode is clearly somebody they are priming for big, big things. And I'm not exactly sure what Dolph Ziggler is up to. This new gimmick angle is terrible. Besides the fact that, honestly, he looks better in terms of ring attire in his Cricket Wireless ads than he does coming to the ring. They're wasting Dolph Ziggler. They're certainly missing the boat on this. The best thing that could happen to Dolph Ziggler is if he was given a nice, good old future endeavors from WWE. I would love to see him in Ring of Honor. I said this last week, Ring of Honor, TNA, even in Lucha Underground, he would be doing incredible things. He would instantly be a main event wrestler based both on his reputation in WWE, his accomplishments there, as well as his in-ring style. And the man can cut a promo. He is a major talent, but for whatever reason, WWE has never fully gotten behind him. And I think that's a loss, and I don't see it changing anytime in the near future. Finally, in the final quarter hour, we got United States Champion Baron Corbin, who at Hell in a Cell won the U.S. title by defeating Ty Dillinger, defeating AJ Styles to retain the belt in a rematch. I will tell you, the match was pretty okay. It wasn't like stellar, wasn't phenomenal, that's for sure. But what really blew my mind is the closing segment where Corbin looks into the camera and addresses the haters. It was awkward, uncomfortable, and simply just not entertaining, interesting, or well done. Baron Corbin, not my choice for secondary champion in the company. They clearly see more in him than I do. Let's hope, for their sake, they're right. That is the Arm Drag Takedown of SmackDown Live. Let's shift gears and go over to what's happening on Global Force Wrestling, Impact Wrestling, Thursday nights. As an overview of what happened on Impact Wrestling this week, I will say my first impression of the show was that they spent more time cutting away to pre-recorded pieces set in Japan and Mexico than they did focusing on the majority of the storylines that are actually happening in Impact Wrestling as they head for Bound for Glory November 5th out of Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I really felt like that was a distraction for me. I did not really get into all of the accomplishments that these guys are having in Japan. That's fantastic. I'm really appreciative of the fact that they're working with Pro Wrestling Noah as well as AAA. But the fact of the matter is that what's happening in the Impact Wrestling six-sided ring on Thursday nights is far more important to me or interesting to me than what they are doing abroad. That's my first impression. That said, the show kicks off with LAX in the ring. I'm going to tell you, I'm really disenchanted at this point by the way the announced team puts over LAX as this super dominant group in Impact Wrestling. The reality is LAX just came in a few months ago as the company was being reborn. They took the titles, and yes, they were dominant, but what is that saying? They haven't had a tag division that's that interesting or that much of a competitor for LAX, which was primarily the only well-oiled team that they've had. Yes, they saw the end of Abyss and Crazy Steve putting an end to Decay, but the reality is they haven't had any competitors, and OVE, the newly crowned Impact Wrestling Tag Team Champions, have barely been in the company a little over a month, and they've already got the belts on them. As it turns out, LAX and OVE have an in-ring confrontation, which leads to, hilariously, Conan calling them a couple of tweakers from Ohio and saying he's going to send them back to the trailer parks they came from. The irony of this situation is, if they weren't so chunky, they really would look like a couple of tweakers, and I 100% believe they probably do come from a trailer park somewhere. With that said, LAX gives them a massive beatdown, and it sets up for their Bound for Glory tag team rematch, which is going to be a 51-50 match. I'm not sure what that means, but according to Diamante, it means that OVE is going to be competing against all the members of LAX at once. It doesn't make any sense to me. I really think that this could have used a significantly larger build. It would have been far better, in my opinion, if OVE had been held from holding the titles until Bound for Glory, so that this would have been a big moment for them. They would have gotten their pay-per-view win on a larger scale, and maybe by then people would have been more invested in them. I just am not that into this team. I'm sorry about it. Sorry, guys. I'm not. When is Reno Scum coming back? Adam Thornstowe and Luster the Legend were sidelined by Adam Thornstowe's injury. He's back in full force. I just saw him on a show for All Pro Wrestling. He took on Jeff Cobb for the championship. He did not win that title, but the fact is they are back in full force. If GFW has any kind of common sense whatsoever, they're going to bring Thornstowe and Luster in to win those belts sooner rather than later. The guys were so over before Adam's injury, and honestly, they look like a tag team. They're great in the ring. They cut a good promo. They have everything that's needed to really spice up the current situation in GFW, which pretty much exclusively is just two teams, are LAX and OVE. You don't have much choice. By the way, Mario Bacara and Fala Ba should be contenders for these belts. The guys tore up the scene in the independent circle. They've held tag team titles before. Put them into a spot where they are at least considered contenders. You've jobbed them out like nobody's business. I'm pissed by that. Fala Ba, I'm a big fan. If you're listening, if you hear this, I'm a big fan of yours, big guy. Also, on the show, we cut away to Taryn Terrell calling out Gail Kim. She's basically suggesting that she would be a better fit for Gail's husband, Robert Irvine. You guys know him from all of his reality television shows. Ultimately, Gail Kim smacks the living shit out of Taryn Terrell, setting up for their four-way match. It's going to be Taryn Terrell, Gail Kim, Allie, and Sienna facing off for the Women's Championship, the Knockouts title at Bound for Glory. I'm calling it now. I think Gail Kim is going to win the title in front of a hometown crowd, but we have yet to see that. Also on the card, we got Tejano, Caleb Conley, and Sienna facing off in mixed tag team action against James Storm, Desmond Xavier, and Allie. It was a pretty interesting match. Overall, I didn't quite get this. What the hell? You couldn't have gotten sort of three more bizarre people to throw together. This is one of those things where I feel like you throw shit against the wall and see what sticks. Or in this case, they had a whole bunch of things, angles that they wanted to push all at once. So they just threw them together in one match. To me, this was a write-off. I'm not really that into it. Ultimately, James Storm picks up the win. Who fucking cares? One definite bright spot of the show was the confrontation in the ring between Rosemary after she picked up a quick win over some female jobber, and Taya Valkyrie. The two are going to be facing off at Bound for Glory to see who is the better knockout. As they confront one another, it looks like a stare down is going to happen. Only Rosemary goes to spray mist in Taya's face, but Bada boom, bada bing. Taya has beat her to the punch. Taya sprays Rosemary, then gives her the road to Valhalla, standing atop the former Knockouts champion, Victorious. This should be a knockdown dragout match. It's going to be a good one. I am looking forward to this confrontation at Bound for Glory. Taya is probably the single hottest prospect in Impact Wrestling right now, and I look forward to her reign of dominance over the Knockouts division, which should be coming very soon. We also saw a spot where Grado, who is working like a dog as part of Park and Rec, comes face to face with his manager, I guess, who is now driving a sports car filled with bimbos. It turns out that all of the money that Grado has been making has been going to pay for hoes. And, of course, expensive dinners and large living by his entertainment managers. Grado appears to be completely over it. And guess what? I'm on board, Grado. I'm over this shit, too. Once again, we cut away for an extended thing here of Eddie Edwards defending his title in Eli Drake defending the GFW Global Championship in Japan. Yawn. Nobody cares. Didn't care. Ultimately, the main event was a very well-done main event. It saw Garza Jr. in his unexpected main event level push, facing off against Johnny Impact, the winner facing the champ at Bound for Glory. I will say that there was one point where Garza Jr. got the upper hand because he snatched off his pants, which distracted Johnny Impact, allowing Garza to pick up a two count. Hello, if Garza Jr. snatched off his pants in my presence, I would be more than distracted. Definitely a good looking guy, very sexy. Same ditto for Johnny Impact for that matter. On an amusing note, they cut away to a video of Eli Drake in Japan watching the match, apparently on his iPad or what have you. He's in full ring gear in a locker room. The people from GFW realize there's a 13-hour time difference. We're to be expecting that Eli Drake at 10 a.m. or 10:30 in the morning is watching this match as it's happening in Orlando at 9:30 at night. This is the next day, and he's already in his ring gear? What the hell? Come on now. Like, let's use a little bit of realism here, people, because that is literally the first thing I thought about. I was just in Taiwan last year. It's a massive time difference. So what the fuck is he already doing in his ring gear in the locker room? Just chilling in the middle of the morning? Oh, whatever. It makes no sense to me. Also, on a related note and things that don't make sense, the reality of this situation is I'm a little confused as they go into Bound for Glory. We got to see a couple weeks ago Eli Drake pick up a dirty victory over Johnny Impact. It feels like they wasted that chance. Once again, I would have been much more interested in seeing them build towards a first-time match between the two at Bound for Glory. I'm really torn as to who I think is going to go, believing Ottawa as the champ. Johnny Impact, this seems like the place that they would put him over big. But I'm beginning to really believe that they are dedicated, and I hope they are, to Eli Drake as champion. The man is doing great work. Ultimately, shortly after this match was decided, Johnny Impact picking up the victory, Jim Cornette comes to the ring to talk to him about his match at Bound for Glory, and Chris Adonis sneaks up from behind, cracks him over the head with a board, and lays out Johnny Impact at the end of the main event. Chris Adonis right now is playing a definite lackey to Eli Drake. I think that maybe we're going to get to see the two of them face off down the road. It'd be a great match for sure. But they end the show with something that I thought was awful. They sent Moose and Bonner, Stephen Bonner, a UFC legend, according to them, over to America Top Team's compound to exact revenge on America's Top Team. Well, of course, they show up. It's so unrealistic, right? Because they're entering this building secretly or whatever. And, of course, there's a camera crew on hand, so the realism is already out the door. But it's after hours. America's Top Team isn't there. So what do Moose and Bonner decide to do? They ask the woman who's working the desk to go get a pad of paper or whatever, because apparently, you know, hey, to leave a message for somebody, you're going to leave a written note, but they don't have paper and pen at the front desk, whatever. So she disappears, and they go about destroying, and I use that in real quotes, destroying America's Top Team's store. they show 15 variations of Moose shattering the front of a glass case that's holding a variety of UFC titles and championships, as well as a couple of trophies. Then they show Bonner destroy the front of it. They beat up a couple of trophies. This was a real low-budget promo, you guys. All they were cost is one cheap-ass showcase to do this. And then they went into their merchandise store, knocked over a thing, threw some t-shirts on the ground, and then Moose stole a pack of socks as they left. A, it was just so cheesy, but remind me, never hire that bitch at the front counter. Who the hell is going to watch people come in into your workplace and destroy things without at least calling 911, calling the police? She just shrugged and was like, oh, well, what the hell can I do? Bitch, you're fired. That's what you can do. You can hit the unemployment line, hunty. You're out of here. I'm not going to let somebody come in and destroy my workplace without at least calling the police and reporting that shit. It was a very weird way to end the show. I didn't really buy into it. After a really good episode last week, I felt that this one decidedly fell short. I think it's because of the fact that a lot of the storylines are slowly progressing in ways that I don't care about. One of the big news items to come out of this is the fact that Alberto El Patron will be returning at Bound for Glory. I don't know who he's going to beat, especially since Paige is off to the WWE now, reportedly. But he's going to be back, and he's sure to be in title contention soon. I find it really, really hard at this point to even consider getting behind Patron because we know way too much about what's going on in his personal life, whether the allegations against him are true or not. Too much controversy shrouding the guy. I would not be putting him back in a top-level position with my company. But hey, it's GFW, and their choices are a little bit suspect. All right, that was the arm drag takedown of what's going on in Impact Wrestling. I did want to give you a quick arm drag takedown recap of my weekend at All Pro Wrestling. Last week, I went out and caught a live All Pro Wrestling show here in San Francisco Bay Area. Highlighting that, of course, was the previously mentioned Adam Thornstow versus Jeff Cobb match for the All Pro Wrestling Heavyweight Championship. In case you are not familiar with Jeff Cobb, but you watch Lucha Underground, he plays Dario Cueto's masked brother, the masked madman of the Cueto family, and a former Lucha Underground champion. That's what he's known for in Lucha Underground, but he's also a former Olympic wrestler for Guam, though he was born in the United States. He competed for Guam, and he's wrestled throughout the independent circle. Great guy, and looking to get him on an upcoming episode of Arm Drag Takedown to talk to us. He managed to better Adam Thornstow, holding on to his championship. On the undercard of that, Luster the Legend came out on the short end of the stick as he faced off against former WWE heavyweight champion Jack Swagger. Jack Swagger, the All-Americans American, was competing for his first time in All-Pro Wrestling. He won his match, and they ended the show with a confrontation in the ring between Jeff Cobb and Jack Swagger, setting up for a November 10th show at San Francisco's Cal Palace. They are going to go head-to-head for the first time ever with the APW Universal title on the line. That's going to be a huge show that's going to feature Rey Mysterio Jr. as well as a superstars, including Johnny Impact, who goes by John Morrison in the company, and many others. That's for details about that, go to calpalace.com, I believe, or just Google All Pro Wrestling. That's going to be coming next month. It's going to be a big show, and I'll be there to cover it. Meanwhile, mark your calendars, Bay Area, on November 2nd. That's a Thursday night. At San Francisco's El Toro Nightclub, Wrestling for Charity will be making its first appearance in San Francisco. And I, as the first lady of Wrestling for Charity, am going to be on the show as well. It's going to be a big night for us. We're making our San Francisco debut, and I hope that all of you will come out. Meanwhile, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have Ring of Honor superstar Flip Gordon on with us. You're listening to Arm Drag Takedown. I'm your host, Poyo Del Mar, and we'll be back in a moment. Follow Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar on Facebook and Twitter. You can find this podcast at ADT with PDM. That's at ADT with PDM. Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. And we are back with more Arm Drag Takedown with Poyo Del Mar. I'm your hostess, Poyo Del Mar. Quite possibly the world's most wrestling-obsessed drag personality. We are joined at this time by Ring of Honor superstar Flip Gordon. Flip Gordon will be facing Will Ospreay this Sunday, October 15th, at the Global Wars I pay-per-view event in Chicago. He's currently on tour with the Ring of Honor Global Wars Tour, which is hitting Buffalo, New York, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Columbus, Ohio, and culminating in Chicago at the iPay-Per-View event. Please welcome at this time to Arm Drag Takedown one of the hottest prospects of the last year on the indie circuit, and now a new signee of Ring of Honor. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Flip Gordon.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk today. I really enjoyed getting to see you at All Pro Wrestling, too. You guys put on a great four-way match and a lot of high-flying action.
Thank you, man. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. That was my first time in San Francisco, so it was really cool. The crowd was awesome. I can't wait to come back. It was such a really cool experience.
Well, you had the opportunity to work with Carl Fredericks, who's like one of the hottest prospects, I think, probably in all pro wrestling. He's really doing well for himself, and I expect to see big things from him in the future. So you guys put on a great match, and Jay White was in that match too, which also pretty cool to get to see him.
Yeah, I mean, I had never been in the ring with them before, so to come to their hometown and share the ring with them was really cool, and they were very excited and very happy.
I want to ask you a little bit about your journey to Ring of Honor, because Ring of Honor has made a pretty big deal of signing you to their exclusive contract, and I was wondering how it is that you decided that Ring of Honor was the company for you.
It was just the right time, I think, and the right offer. I liked what they had to offer. I liked the direction that they were going in, and I had already done one show with them against Matt Sydal. And so, like, I already knew how it worked. I had a lot of friends there. I was very comfortable. And I think that's what it mainly was, the comfortability, knowing how it was run, knowing that I was going to be taken care of, and if I had any problems, that I could talk to people because I know people there already. And I think that's one of the ultimate things that made me end up signing with Ring of Honor.
It was reported that you had declined an offer from Impact Wrestling. I thought at the time that you said that it was because of the fact that you do a lot of independent dates. Does Ring of Honor allow you to do things that Impact would not have?
Yeah. With Ring of Honor, I'm still allowed to do anything independent. There's a lot of factors, and it was a really tough choice. And I just think that Ring of Honor was the best for me at that time, and I still think that I made the right choice.
Right. I mean, it's obvious that right now, it looks like Ring of Honor is allowing a lot of its competitors to go and represent, you know, the company in their own way around the world. Because not the last show, but two shows ago, I saw for APW, they had Ring of Honor World Champion Cody Rhodes there. And I thought that was really cool, you know, that the champion's out on the road defending the title.
Oh, 100%. It's never been done before.
Yeah, it hasn't been done in years. I'll say that for sure. It hasn't been done in years since world champions went to territories or smaller companies to defend the championship. And
Yeah. I meant more for, like, Ring of Honor.
Right, got it. So you're going to be facing Will Ospreay on the upcoming iPay-Per-View event. Tell me a little bit about that match and the rivalry.
Which match?
The upcoming match that you have this weekend at the iPay-Per-View event.
Kenny Omega and the Bucks.
Yeah.
And Will Ospreay.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I was told Will Ospreay. I didn't realize it was a multiple party match that you're going to be participating in.
Yeah, I have two matches. I have one in Columbus. It's me and Best Friends versus the Elite. And then the second night in Chicago, it's me versus Will Ospreay.
Okay, so that's the one that was mentioned to me, the Will Ospreay match. So it looks like this weekend is going to be really busy for you, and I know that Ring of Honor has put together this entire weekend of activities, events, matches, and touring for you guys, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, I'm really excited. This will be my second time in Chicago for Ring of Honor. So it'll be really cool because I remember the first time the crowd was absolutely amazing, and that can make all the difference when it comes to being a professional wrestler. I shared the ring with Ospreay once before over in Ireland, and so to be able to have a one-on-one with him now would be really cool. I'd be able to get in there and show people that I can hang with the best.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because of the fact that you've only been professional wrestling for just a fairly short period of time, but Will Ospreay is one of the people that harkens me back to that comment, you know, about that Randy Orton made about the indie wrestlers or whatever. But Will Ospreay is really one of those people who's built a name as an indie wrestler, and kind of the whole world is focusing their attention on him in many different ways as like one of the hottest new prospects to be going somewhere in the industry. And if you have the opportunity and ability to hang with him, that's going to speak very highly of you.
Exactly, and that's my goal going into this weekend, is just to go in there, show that I can hang with Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Will Ospreay. And if I can do so, I think it'll say a lot about what the future holds for me.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely think so. That's one of the tried and true ways of proving your worth, is if you can get in the ring and hang with the best, then that shows that you are on their level, and there's a lot that people should be looking for from you.
100%.
You know, I was looking on the internet to prepare for this interview, and there is not a lot written about you right now. I mean, there's some, your Wikipedia page is there, there's like some, the bios on Ring of Honor, and I was scouring through every link to try to find out as much as I can about you for our conversation, and I don't know if you are aware of this, but on the second page of your Google search, you are listed as, like, on this website called Wrestling Beefcakes. And it's, I don't know what the whole purpose of it is. I've never seen the website before, but it really cracked me up. You've got a significant amount of admirers on that site, it would appear. Just letting you know.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to have to Google myself and look for that website.
Yeah, it's, I can't wait for you to read some of the comments. Looking at it, it was very interesting, we'll say that. One anonymous commenter said, it appears he has quite a nice package, and I really like his high school graduation photo, or whatever it was. It was so friggin'...
That's so funny, because I got a comment like that on Twitter once, and it was the funniest thing. Somebody was like, your trunks make you look like you have a big... dick. And, like, I was just like, what? I didn't know how to respond to it, so I just kind of, like, recorded it with, like, laughing emojis. But, yeah, I get some weird comments like that. But, I mean, it happens, you know. I'm an entertainer in a business where people are allowed to say what they want, and I just take it as a compliment, so.
Right. You're also a grown man who's, like, jumping around in a wrestling ring in basically a Speedo.
In my
so,
underwear.
Yeah, in your underwear. So, I mean...
baby oil.
Yeah. So, you know what? I took one of my really good friends to that APW match that you were in on Friday, and it was his first time ever at a wrestling show. And so we're in there, and so this is, you know, two grown gay men at a wrestling event. I've gone to wrestling shows my entire life. I've never, you know, like, that's always been one of my loves, whatever. And of course, as a huge wrestling fan, it's like super fun to get to introduce people to what you love, right? You know, so we were there, and my friend was like, why are they shouting? Like, why is everybody chanting, touch his penis? Why, like, what is this? Why is this guy
for Joey Ryan?
They're like, why is he like, why are they chanting, touch his penis? Why is he like rubbing baby oil on himself? Why did the guy with the long hair put the lollipop in his underwear? And I was like thinking to myself at the time, I'm like, fuck, like, I love this. And it's not because I'm, you know, it's not for the sexual element of it. But then the one show I take my friend to is like rife with homoeroticism and, you know, penising. And I was like, well, maybe I've converted a fan, regardless of how that happened.
Yeah, as long as you got him, that's all that matters, you know?
Exactly.
One way or another, you know, whether it's the comedy, whether it's the wrestling, whether it's the wrestlers, you know. I mean, that's kind of our job as entertainers, is to get that broad audience, no matter what background you come from, no matter where you come from. The fact that we can bring so many people together through wrestling, and that's what's so cool about it. So whether he liked it for that part or for my match or for a different match, long as he enjoyed it, had a good night, and wants to come back to a future show, then we did our job.
Yeah, he enjoyed you, and he enjoyed Carl Frederick. I don't know whether that was because of physical reasons or the match, but either way.
I hope so. No,
yeah.
I'm kidding.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, one of the things about that, about your particular style of wrestling and the things that you're known for, you know, obviously with the name like Flip, like you're expecting people to respond to a lot of the acrobatics you do, the high flying maneuvers. It's a very different style than what we might have seen even 10 years ago. And there are people,
100%, yeah.
Yeah, it was people's idea of high flying a few years ago was like a drop kick, you know, maybe a cross body block off the top rope, a few things like that. We were never seeing the stuff that we see on a regular basis now, where people are doing the things that you do. Like, you did at least 20 backflips during your match, and, you know, a variety of things off the ropes. I mean, it was pretty spectacular. As much as people love and appreciate that, is there a point where that goes a little too far? Because I've seen matches that looked almost more like a choreographed dance routine than an actual wrestling match.
Yeah, I hate it when matches look choreographed.
Yeah.
And, like, I try to use my flips in different ways. Obviously, with a name like Flip, you have to do at least a couple flips. But I try to place them in ways where they kind of make sense. Like, I use them to, like, evade. I use them to get, like, away. I use them, obviously, as moves. But I don't just do them just to do them. I always try to think, like, well, would this make sense? Like, could this happen, like, you know, in, like, a real fight on the streets? Like, could this, you know? And I always try to ask, because I don't want to go out there and put on a match where people could be like, oh, that just looked like garbage. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I...
And, like, me personally, I hate wrestling other high flyers, because I feel like when you put two high flyers in there, the realism goes down. And I love a styles clash. I love going against big guys. I love going against technical guys, strikers, because I feel like you have that styles clash. And I think it just complements my style so much better. And I think with the high flying, it complements their style so much better. And it tells a better story. Because me being a high flyer, I want to fly. You know, them being a technical guy or a striker, they're going to be like, okay, I want to keep him on the ground. Because if he can't fly, he can't win.
Right.
And, you know, and obviously then I have to figure out ways to do what I do if my leg's taken out or if my arm's taken out or, you know, like, you know, and it's just, it tells a better story in my opinion. Whereas when you have two high flyers, it's just, hey, who can do the coolest stuff? I feel like most matches are.
And I honestly, I saw a match a couple months ago. I won't say what show or who it was, but, you know, it was one of those things where it was like a series of spinning kicks that miss and ducks and flips that this, it was one after another. And it just felt so gratuitous. Like, okay, I get it. You know, you can kick and you can jump, and both of you can, we get that. But the other, I was in the absolute minority. I felt like watching that match, cause I thought it was sucking, and people around me were chanting like, this is awesome. And which I, at this point, I believe that they would really chant that about anything. Because they just like chant.
Yeah, but I mean, there's different styles for everybody. I mean, like we just discussed, your friend never been to wrestling before. And so he didn't know what he liked, you know? So his style of wrestling that he likes might be different than yours, which might be different than mine.
Right.
You know, I mean, like I prefer not to watch technical wrestling because, in my opinion, I don't find it very entertaining. But when you have a guy in there like Sabre Jr. who can, like, just do things and make it so entertaining, it makes it enjoyable to watch. But like me, because I love that high-flying athletic style, when I go to watch a match to study, I don't go to chain wrestling or to technical wrestling. I go to like WCW cruiserweights with like Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio. And that's what makes a whole show a show, is because you have something for everybody. You have the girls, you have the guys, you have the comedy, you have the fast, you have the slow, you have the high flying, you have the technical, you have the strikes. You have something for everybody.
Right. Well, I mean, technically speaking, a wrestling show from start to finish tells a story. So you can't really tell
the
same.
The whole show, each match should tell a story, but the whole show should also tell a story, the whole.
Exactly. And I mean, I'm not talking like a serialized program. What I mean is that there's something for everybody, and, you know, every style is represented. A variety, because really what you've said is so true. You can't watch basically the same match over and over. You know, even if it's different people, it begins to feel a little bit like, I've seen this, we just saw this, you know. So the different styles are really mandatory. By the way, the Beefcake whatever website commented that you frequently are placed in David and Goliath stories as David. So there you go. Like they've noticed your propensity for being in against a larger guy that you get to dazzle with your acrobatics.
I mean, I've been an underdog my whole life, so seems about right.
So I was curious, you are an active member of the armed forces.
I am. I'm in the Army National Guard for the state of Massachusetts.
As a member of the enlisted forces, what are your thoughts on the kneeling during the national anthem thing? There's so much controversy around
it. It's very controversial. I got in a little bit of trouble on Twitter last night for talking about it. Because I feel like my stuff was taken a little bit out of context. So I'm glad you asked. My take is, I think kneeling during the national anthem is a disrespect to the flag and being in the Army. And seeing people that have died for the flag and for this country, I find it very disrespectful. And obviously a lot of other people find it disrespectful. But I do agree with the fact that they are trying to speak up on a matter that they are passionate about. I just wish there was like a different way or a different time to do so. Whether it be before the game, before the national anthem, or after the national anthem, halftime, you know, during the quarter, or not showing up to play the game at all and saying, you know what, I'm not playing until these issues are resolved. I wish there was a different way they would go about it besides kneeling during the national anthem, because in my opinion, it is disrespectful, but everybody's entitled to their own opinion. And that's something that I was trying to get across last night. But obviously I got a little upset because people just weren't really listening to me, and I started getting attacked, and then I said something I shouldn't have, like, disrespect a flag in front of me and see what happens. I guess people thought I was threatening them. So I got a little bit out of hand, but it's like, what I was just trying to get across is I understand why they're protesting, and I agree with it 100%. What I don't agree with is the time that they are protesting, because you should never, in my opinion, you shouldn't disrespect something that means so much to somebody that's fought for the country. I mean, there's been men and women that have died of all races for this country, for the freedom, for that flag. And so to disrespect it, in my opinion, is just, it hurts, especially being in the Army and seeing people and knowing people that have died for this country. It's just such a disrespectful thing, in my opinion. And I wish there was another way. I mean, obviously, they're trial and error. People are figuring out, hey, okay, we can't do this, or hey, maybe this will work. But I agree with it 100%, because obviously they are trying to say something. They are trying to take a stand. My only argument is I just wish it wasn't during the national anthem.
I have my opinions on this. Everybody has their own opinion, and I think that everybody's entitled to it. But I want to pose to you like a differing mindset, or pose a question that would reflect my differing mindset, and that would be that, are people really dying for the flag, or are they dying for what the flag and our nation represents to them, which would be things such as the very freedom of speech that allows them to kneel during that? Would they be dying for the very protection of based on equality of all people that kneeling gesture is representing to individuals.
People have died for the right to be free in this country, which would include the right to kneel during the national anthem, which I agree with 100%, besides the fact that I personally think it's disrespectful, because I wear a flag, an American flag, on my right shoulder, and so does every other soldier out there. So when that soldier dies, that flag is on them. They are wearing that flag when they die. When they are buried, they have a flag over their grave, you know, over their coffin. I have folded flags for dead military members and given it to their next of kin, crying as I hand them the flag. And so for somebody just to say that flag is just a piece of material, it hurts, because it's so much more than just a piece of material. Because I've literally have seen people cry. I've seen people, you know, I mean, I've seen families and loved ones, and I've seen friends, and I've seen all kinds of people die for the pride of that flag or the pride of that nation, whether it be the flag or what it represents. And so just the whole disrespect thing is what bothers me about it. But like you said, that is their right, and that's the right that I fought for. And everybody is entitled to their own opinion. And that's just my opinion.
Right. I mean, I can completely understand where you're coming from, because of the fact that for you, what the flag represents is very personal through your own, you have signed up to give your life, possibly, to protect the nation, to protect the flag. And I can understand why that would elicit a really strong response from you. And the benefit, I think, honestly, of this particular type of protest is the fact that there are other options that could be made that would include a lot of violence, possible death of people here in the country, to try to get the same point across. And at least through the actions of a very few people who are professional athletes and these high-profile individuals such as this, it's at least sparked a conversation around the topic. And I wish that the topic of conversation was way less about whether it's disrespectful to the flag or not, and more about the fact that they're actually protesting the fact that on a national scale, we are doing nothing to address the issues of police brutality against people of color. I think that that's really the bigger picture, and I think that the flag thing is obscuring that conversation just a little bit.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's going to always be a problem, just because people come from different backgrounds, different lifestyles, and everybody's going to have a different opinion. Even when we vote, I mean, that's how we're programmed. You know, you have a Democrat or a Republican. You know, so from right there, when you talk about politics, everybody has a different opinion. And I've kind of learned my lesson to just, I forget sometimes that I'm not just a soldier and that I can't really voice my complete opinion. And so, like, I normally don't even talk about politics, but something was just bothering me, and I thought I would try to, like, just say, like, my part, but it definitely went awry and got a little bit out of hand. And part of it was because I let it get a little personal, and I let my feelings get involved into my argument. Because of my passion for my country. And I was definitely in the wrong for some of the things I said, and I will take full ownership for that. And I'm open to hearing all ideas to how we can fix the issue at hand, maybe in a less disrespectful way, even though a lot of people don't find it disrespectful. But if a lot of people are finding it disrespectful, it's probably coming across disrespectful. Because I'm not the only one that thinks they're respectful, because there's a lot of people on TV that are booing when they kneel.
Well, I don't think that you're the only one.
And that just turns the negativity against what they're trying to do. And I wish there was a better way to put it in a better spotlight. That way people can not, like, I hate it when they kneel and they get booed, because then they're like, it's just hurting what they're trying to do. And when what they're trying to do is actually a positive and a good thing. I wish I had, like, the answer to, like, what would be the right thing to do, but I don't. And, I mean, like I said, it's just my opinion that I find it disrespectful. But at least they're doing something, because they could just sit on the sidelines and collect a paycheck and do nothing. So at least they're doing something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think that there is no form of protest that has yet been created that everyone is going to appreciate. By the very nature of the fact that it's a protest, it's protesting against something that is, generally speaking, of a bigger picture, which means it's a minority protesting against a majority. And the majority never really likes how the minority decides to express themselves. Whether that's people being frustrated about bans on transgender in the military, or people wanting rights for LGBT people, people wanting to protect people who are Latinos who are being discriminated against and potentially deported. I mean, all these things. Like, there is no way that you can really protest and speak up on behalf of something like that and play 100% nice. That's just not really possible.
Oh, I agree. Because whenever you protest, you're protesting for a reason. Because somebody else has a different opinion, or else you wouldn't have to protest.
Exactly.
So from the very get-go, you're going to have complications with diversity, you know?
You know, defending what you said I think it's great that you decided to, and you have the capacity to take ownership for your part in, you know, whatever happened in the Twitterverse or, you know, in the cyber world of conversation about this matter online. But you got heated because it was personal to you. And I'm sure that people who were responding to you got heated because it was personal to them. And I think that, you know, ideally, what I've always found to work in many situations like this is I just say, you know what, I really like you. And I think that I hope you really like me, and I respect you, and I hope you respect me. But we have the ability to look at things from two different sides of the same coin and see different things in different ways. And that's okay. And we just have to agree that we're going to disagree on this. And let's find something we can love. Both of us love.
Yeah, exactly. Like wrestling. We all love wrestling.
Exactly.
I mean, we all come from different backgrounds. We all have different beliefs. I mean, I hope as a performer that even though we might have different beliefs, that I can still get the support as an entertainer, even though I might not believe in the same God as you or believe in the same politics as you. You know, that's personal stuff, but as an entertainer, I hope I can have people's support. Like, okay, yeah, like, I hope this kid goes far because he's got talent. You know, he's young. You know, he might still have a lot of learning to do, you know. But, like, I saw some things, I was just like, man, like, that seems a little extreme. Like, I was just trying to voice my opinion, not people burning my shirts. You know what I mean? But
I mean,
each their own.
Look at the bright side of that. If they burn your shirt now, like, in a couple years when they're back on the bandwagon, that means they have to buy new shit, and that means you're going
to
make extra profit.
They have to buy a new shirt.
Exactly. You said in an interview that Eddie Guerrero was, like, your ultimate idol when you were growing up as a kid, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
What fueled your love for Eddie Guerrero?
He was just somebody that when he was on the TV, you watched. You didn't look down at your phone. You know, your full attention was on the TV when Eddie was on. And he had the ability to do things that no other wrestler, in my mind, could do. He could have 5 minutes on TV, and he could make you cry, smile, laugh, angry, love him, hate him. You know, like, he just knew how to work a crowd. He knew how to talk. He knew how to wrestle. He knew how to fly. He was the total package. In my opinion, he was one of the best wrestlers to ever live.
And I'm going to tell you, discussing as we were All Pro Wrestling next month is going to be at the Cal Palace in San Francisco, which is a historic West Coast venue for professional wrestling. And the first time I ever saw professional wrestling at the Cal Palace, Eddie Guerrero defeated Brock Lesnar for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship.
That's crazy.
I got to watch that live and in person. It was quite a thrill.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a great match. And now I look at it and I think to myself, wow, now Brock Lesnar can't be beat by anybody according to WWE. And Eddie did it quite handily.
It's because he was one of the best. He's a legend.
He is a legend.
He's a Hall of Famer, and he's somebody that will never be forgotten no matter how many generations pass.
Now, how should people find you online so they can follow what you're doing and read your controversial tweets if they would like?
Hopefully there won't be any more controversial
controversial ones. But you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. It's all the same, at TheFlipGordon. Also, if you happen to burn your T-shirt, go pick up a new one at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheFlipGordon.
All right, Flip, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it. And thanks for talking with us this afternoon. Have a great weekend. I know you're going to kill it over at Ring of Honor. And I look forward to the opportunity
to
see you.
I really appreciate that. Thank you for having me on. And I look forward to coming back to Northern California and hopefully being able to perform for you again.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you as well.
Bye.
All right, everybody. That was Flip Gordon. Catch him Sunday, October 15th. At the Ring of Honor iPay-Per-View in Global Wars, coming to you out of Chicago, Illinois. He's going to be facing Will Ospreay in what is sure to be a standout match. And as he said, if he can go toe-to-toe and hold his own against one of the greatest in the independent wrestling world, he is going to surely have a bright future. Best of luck to you, Flip, and thanks for joining us. This has been Episode 2 of Arm Drag Takedown with Pollo Del Mar. Remember, follow Flip Gordon at TheFlipGordon on all social media platforms. Follow Arm Drag Takedown on Twitter and Facebook at ADT with PDM. And follow me at TheGlamazon PDM. That's TheGlamazon PDM on Twitter. Look me up at Pollo Del Mar Fans. Pollo Del Mar Fans. That's Facebook and Instagram. Let's connect. Meanwhile, we will be back with another Arm Drag Takedown of all of your favorite televised wrestling products next week, and yet another superstar interview. Until then, stick a fork in me. I am done. And so is this podcast. We'll catch you next week for another Arm Drag Takedown.